All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Bet by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, V'chein Beit Abad. So V'chein already means that it's seemingly connected to the previous situations. Rashi connects it and says that it relates to the previous Mishnah, where we had two partners or children in an estate where they split it up. So that's how Rashi reads it. The Balei HaTosafot, on the other hand, say that they're not convinced that the V'chein is relating to that. But rather, they think it's relating back to the situation as of a socher and a maskir. Case of a renter and a landlord. And the scenario in the Mishnah is a renter and a landlord. The truth is that either way, the halacha will turn out to be the same because generally the relationships are the same. The time that it made a difference was with regards to the tikra and the maziva, when you were going to be obligating them different parts of the requirements, depending if he was a socher or if he was a partner in the building. Over here, that's less relevant, and therefore, no matter which way you read it, whether it's a socher maskir or brothers that split up an estate, you will generally come to the same conclusion. So, halakhically, it's not really such a big difference, but just know that Rashi reads it as being brothers who split up an estate, and Balei HaTosafot read it, or lean more heavily towards reading it as a socher maskir. It says, V'chein Beit Abad Shubanui Basela. So you have a olive press that is built into the bedrock. So they have chiseled out or carved out of the bedrock a olive press. Then v'gina achat al gavav. And then on top of it, since it's now underground or in the bedrock, sitting above it, on top of this bedrock, is a planting area where someone has a garden that they plant. V'nifchat. And then the roof collapses in. Meaning that what they dug out of the bedrock collapses. Re'bala gina. The person on top no longer has his gina on top anymore because it collapsed. Yoreid v'zorei alamato. He can come down below and plant in the area below. Ad she'aseh the Beit Bado Kipin. Until the person below rebuilds the Beit Abad. He rebuilds this olive press in a manner by which the gina can then replace on top his garden sitting on top of that. Now here you see the word kipin. Rashi actually, if you look in the old French, says arc volto. So it's an arc vault. So these are arches that are supporting arches for the Beit Abad that's down below. And those supporting arches allow you then to create something on top of it, lay the dirt or the earth on top where you can plant. So that is the idea that until he provides the ability to recreate the garden on top, you can utilize the garden down below. A kotel ve'ailan shenaflu d'reshut harabim. We have a wall or a tree that falls into the reshut harabim, ve'ziku, and they cause damage. Patur milishalem. Over there, he doesn't have to pay for them because it was an unexpected incident. It wasn't something that he could have anticipated. It's really, in all senses, an onus. He had no idea that the tree would collapse. It was a storm that came along. There was something that happened that was unusual that knocked them over, toppled them over into the Rishut Rabim. Now, Danulo Zman Lakutz et Ailan, the story at the Kotel, if already Beit Din notes that there is a public nuisance here, there's some weakness in the tree and it's going to come down unless you take it down. And same with the wall. If they give him an amount of time in order to deal with it, v'naflu b'toch hazman, if they fall within that window, patur, because he hasn't had sufficient time to deal with it, and they had given him that window to deal with it. Achar hazman, if it falls after that time, then he is chayav, because he didn't deal or he didn't take care of that which was incumbent upon him to protect the public from this danger that was there, and Beit Din already warned him. Mishaya kotlo samuch liginat chaveiro. If you have a wall that is standing next to your friend's garden, even if it's a wall between you, v'nafal, and it falls over. V'amarlo, he says to him, p'nei avanecha, come and take your stones out of my yard. I can't utilize my garden in the meantime. Come take your stones and remove them from here. V'amarlo, the other party, the owner of the wall, says, higiucha, says, they're yours. Keep them. I don't want them anymore. Ein shomim lo. We don't listen to him. I mean, assuming that this individual doesn't want them, then we don't listen to him. He wants to plant his field. He has no interest in these stones, and he has no interest in removing these stones. So you can't force that obligation on him when it's the stones are not his, but it is his property, and he can utilize it how he pleases, and he doesn't have to have you demand that you remove them and not him. The owner of the garden has a right to say to the owner of the wall, you come and clear out your stones. Even if you want to be mafkir them, you can't be mafkir them into my property. That's not your right to demand that I take care of them. Mishiki belalav, if the owner of the garden accepts the responsibility, he says, yeah, okay, you don't want them, I'll take them, I'll use them for my purposes. Amar lo helech etziotecha v'ani etol et sheli. If after that fact, the owner of the wall comes back and says, you know what, I'll pay you for everything that you did, meaning whatever cost you undertook to remove the stones and so on and so forth, and I want my stones back, ain shomim lo. He doesn't have a right anymore. So here, once the other party takes up the responsibility and takes care of it, then the owner of the wall no longer has a right to change back. He had a right in the beginning to take his stones back and to deal with it, but once he gives up that right to the other party becomes the controlling party and he can't demand that he give it back to him. So cheret apoel lasotimo betevenu bekash. Person who hires workers to work with him with the straw and with the refuse from the grains. Va'amarlo ten lischari. And he finishes up the work, whatever he'd asked him to do. And he says to him, give me my wages. Va'amarlo tu mashasita bischarecha. Take your wages out of what we worked from. Meaning basically, the tevin and the kash become yours. Ain shomim lo. We don't listen to him. Even though we have, as Rashi notes, a general principle, which is shove kesef ki kesef, that when it comes to money equivalents, they are the same as money. But by a poel, there is a higher standard, as Rashi says over here, because there's an iser of bal talin scharo, that you're not allowed to leave over his wages. And from there, it sounds like bal talin scharo means literally his schar, his actual wages. And so you don't have a right to tell him to take the items that he worked with rather than pay him the cash. We'll speak about it in 1 second. Mishi kibelalav. If the poel decides that he wants to take whatever he worked with as compensation for the wages, v'amarlo helech tzcharcha v'ani etol et sheli, then the other individual comes back, the owner, the person who hired these workers comes back and says, here's your wages, give me the stuff back. Ain shomim lo. He doesn't have a right then to reverse it after the fact. So here, not here, but the Baal HaTos Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Tam in other places, has a gradation with regards to when you have to pay cash and when cash gets a priority. So with regards to Poalim, cash is an absolute necessity. And that might be, the reason behind that might be, is that a Poel works with you all day. At the end of the day, he expects to take cash, which he can then spend on his needs. Again, we're talking about day laborers, people who are depending on that cash, maybe even for their meal that night, and need the cash quickly. You can't hand them something and that they're going to have to go monetize and then get the cash. They're relying on you paying them cash, and to pay them cash equivalents would be unacceptable in that case. And you might be in violation, as Rashi says over here, of Baal Talin, if you don't give him the cash. So that's the first stage. The next stage is a Baal Chov. That is someone who lends money, a creditor, who expects to get paid back. Over there, if you have cash, you have to give him cash. Because when he lent you the money, he expected to get cash back. In a case where you don't have cash, then cash equivalents will work, because that's part of the way that the creditor works. He knows that he can't always get his cash back, and that's why he collateralizes, or that's why he takes a mortgage on your properties, because in the end, he might have to collect through that manner. So cash gets a priority there. But if you don't have cash, then you can pay with cash equivalents. Nezek comes from the Torah, and there we learned in Baba Kama that when it comes to repaying of Nezek, it has to be mina idit. It has to be the best. Over there, the Gemara defined the best differently. It says when it comes to property, you have to give him your best property, idit, when you're paying for Nezek. When it comes to metaltalin, if you pay him, everything is considered to be idit. Because if you can't sell it here, you can sell it somewhere else. You always have the ability to liquidate it and to get your cash back. So by Nezikin, you do not have an obligation to pay in cash. You have an obligation to pay mina idit. The definition of idit by karka is very clear. It's the best property. How you define idit in karka is a little harder. The Gemara deals with that. But in general, it's the best quality property. By metaltalin, you can pay whatever it is. You can give him subim. You can give him whatever you choose. And so therefore, by Nezikin, it's the easiest to make the repayment, because there you can use cash equivalents in order to repay him. So in terms of gradations, schar of a poel is the one where there's most obligation to give cash, and yes, you might be in violation of the lav d'oraita if you don't give him cash. So now, Gemara says, nifchita. What does it mean that the beit abad that is carved into the bedrock, what does it mean that the roof collapsed? Rav amar biruba, similar to what Rav said before, with regards to the upper chamber, lower chamber, where people had a duplex, he says that the rove has to go. Shmuel amar be'arba. So over here, it's not clear. Before, in the Gemara, Shmuel's statement was Ba'arba'a, which was a Lashon Zachar, which would mean that Shmuel meant Arba'at Vachim. Over here, the Lashon in the Gemara is Ba'arba'a, which is Nekeva. So Arba'a would be Arba'amot. Now, that's not unreasonable, because when you're talking about a house, then Arba'at Vachim is already a significant space. When you're talking about something outdoors, in a Beit Abad, in a garden, then Arba'amot would be something considered significant. Although there are those that read the Arba over here as being a Girsa problem, and they say that it's Arba'at Fachim, it's really Zachar. But from the way that our Gemara reads, over here would be Amot, and over in the previous Mishnah, it would be Arba'at Fachim. Rav Amar Biruba, Aval Ba'arba, when it comes to four Amot, Adam Zorea, Chetzio Lamata, Chetzio Lamalo. That's not a major inconvenience. People, in many cases, do a stair-stepped type of planting. They do terraced farming. And so over here, this will be a smaller terraced farming. We'll have to deal with the field a little below and the field a little bit above. But he can deal with it. Shmuel Amar, Barba, in Adam Zorea, Chetzio Lamata, Chetzio Lamalo. Already then it's too significant. And a person doesn't do that. He doesn't have half his field up top and half his field down below. Assumption here is likely that this field is a field that needs to be watered and is not a field that gets its water from the rain. If it got its water from the rain, you might be able to argue that it's a little less cumbersome for him to have it on two levels. I mean, still, he has to plant it, he has to plow it, he has to harvest it. So there still is an inconvenience. But watering is the most significant inconvenience. So you could argue that here it's related to the fact that these are fields that get watered rather than rain water suffices. V'tzricha. And now the Gemara goes, we need both of these, because here we have this Machloket Rav and Shmuel here with regards to the Beit Abad and the Gina, as well as to the house, the duplex before, where the floor collapsed. Diashmin and Dira. Had you only told us about the Dira before, Bahak Amar Shmuel, over there, Mishum Dolo Avide Inche the Dairi Portahacha Portahacha. People don't live half upstairs and half downstairs. Valinyan Zriya, when it comes to planting, Avidi Inche, the Zari Ocha Porta, Vacha Porta, people do terraced type of farming. People have different fields and different locations, up, down. So it's not so unusual, so far-fetched. So maybe Ema Modele the Rav. Maybe he would agree to Rav, and the answer is no, he doesn't. He still holds by his position over here. Vit Mar Bahach, if we only had the case by the garden, Bahach Kamar Rav, maybe over here, that's where Rav says that it's not such a big inconvenience. So Baha, by the house, Ema Modele the Shmuel. Maybe you'd agree to Shmuel that it's very inconvenient. Tzricha, therefore, we see in both cases that Rav and Shmuel stick to their positions, stick to their guns, and they believe that the same issue that applies there applies here, and their positions are the same. Rav requires rov by both cases, and Shmuel requires arba'a or arba, depending on the girsa that you have, for tachri and for amot in these instances. Right, so now the Gemara says, natnu lo zman, if Beit Din gives him a window of opportunity to clear up the mess, meaning that it's going to fall, they're afraid it's going to fall, the wall's going to come down, take it down in this window of time. Bekama zman Beit Din. What is the normal window that Beit Din affords a person to deal with these issues? Rabbi Yochanan Shloshim Yom, 30 days. From here, you can see on the top Tosafot, the Balei Tosafot, conclude from this that this has far-reaching implications, which is, Umikan, anu lumedim, zman Beit Din lifroa chovo, ulekama dvarim davi lamed yom. That any time a person has an obligation to pay back a chov, or he has something that Beit Din obligated him in, you have a 30-day window. He says this is standard policy for Beit Din. 30 days is the standard policy, and we get it from here. Here the Gemara declares that what is the Zman Beit Din? Zman Beit Din is 30 days. Although Tosafot then already, once he establishes that as the principle, the qualifies that a little bit and says, Mio the chol nizikin lo amar she Zman Beit Din lamed yom kamo hacha. When it comes to damage that a person does or causes to the rabbim, we don't always give you a 30-day window. He is thinking of the Gemara in HaMeniach in the third parak in Baba Kama, where a person trips in the Rishut HaRabim or his gamal falls over and he's in the Rishut HaRabim. We don't give you 30 days then to come and clean up this gamal that's laying on the ground or your barrel that's split on the ground. That would be unreasonable. He says, V'hainu ta'ama, the bishakala yechol asira misham. You don't need 30 days to clean up a mess in the Rishut HaRabim. You can clean it up in a short period of time. So we're going to obligate you right away. If you don't do it, then you're going to be responsible. If it's something more significant, like taking a wall down or taking a tree down, which is much more involved and much more difficult, then we'll give you a 30-day window to hire the people and to take care of it or to actually get the work done. But again, if it's in a case where it's reasonable to assume a shorter time, we're going to tell you, do it in that shorter time. We don't give you automatically 30 days just because the Zman Beit Din is 30 days. Misha Yakutlo, this is referring to the latter half of the Mishnah. Habniktani Seifa, the latter half of the Mishnah says, Helech Yitziotecha, take your expenditures, meaning that what the owner of the wall wants now, his wall collapsed into his friend's garden. He told the friend, listen, I want you to take the stones, I'm not interested in clearing this out. The friend says, you know what? Okay, I could use some stones, I could use some building blocks here, I'm going to take it. Then he changes his mind and he says, here, take the money you undertook to remove the stones or whatever work you did to take away the stones, and I want my stones back. The Mishnah says he can't do that. Ein shomim lo. But if you think about it, we missed a stage in between. The first stage is his wall falls into the garden. Then he says to the other party, higiucha, they're yours. The other party says, okay, I'll accept it. Great. Then he doesn't clear them out right away. He waits a week, and then he starts to clear them out. The next line in the Mishnah is, if he says, I'll reimburse you for whatever you paid, then he can't listen to him. But there's an interim stage before he actually does the work, but after he already accepted the stones. And that the Mishnah doesn't address. And that's what the Gemara is saying here. There's a diuk out of that, which is, Habniktani Seifa, Helech Yitziotecha, take your monies, meaning this is the reimbursement for what you did, Michlau, Dipaninu Askinan. It's only a case where he's already removed them. Taima Dipaninu. That's only because he's already removed them. Halo Paninu. Had he yet to remove them, lo, he would not get them. So if he comes back to him before he's already removed the stones, sounds like he could pay him the money and take the stones back. Hamai, why is that true? V'tikna lei sadeyu. Why doesn't his chatzer kone? Here we have an owner of a wall who is relinquishing his ownership over the stones and saying, higiucha, they're yours. This individual, okay, he's not present, but he accepts, and his chatzer can be kone on his behalf. Chatzer shel adam kone, which we're going to see in again, damar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chinino, chatzero shel adam kone lo shelo midato, that the chatzer of a person can work even without his knowledge. So over here, where the other party already relinquished control, and even if we don't yet know what the owner there wants, but even if he's not present, if he says, okay, or we, after the fact, says, I want them, then his chatzer already did the work for him, even without his knowledge, even without his knowing. Your chatzer works to your benefit. If you think that a chatzer can only work midato, then the other party would have to be present in order for your chatzer to work. You can see that in the Tosafot over here. He says, liklenei chatzero. Says, aval ilav the Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina. Had it not for him, ati shapir, den konola elohechad omeid betzad sadeu. It would only work if you were literally standing there. So why they bring in Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina is because without the presence of the individual, his chatzer would not work on his behalf. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina's chiddush is that you don't have to be there. As long as your chatzer is a secure location, then it can work, shalom idato, even without you being present, and possibly even without you knowing about it. As long as it's to your benefit, then it can work on your behalf. Either way, it should be his yard, or his chatzer, should be able to work on his behalf now. And why is there a right of the owner of the wall's party to come and buy them back and retract the offer? It says, you need willing parties over here. So now, in terms of the chatzer is working and doing its job. The problem is that the owner of the wall, did he really relinquish control over the stones? Because why is he saying to him, higiucha? Because he can't get it done fast enough. And the Gemara says here, avahocha ishtemutehu dekamishtamitle. He's trying to buy time so that he can actually get the work done. He doesn't really want to give the stones to the other party, but he knows the other party wants them out of here right now. But he can't do it right now. So how does he buy himself time? He says, higiucha, they're yours. That way he placates the guy. The guy thinks he's going to get the stones, and then he comes up with the cash, or he gets the workers in there to do it. That's why he has the ability to rescind it, because he never really, with a full heart, relinquished control over the stones. If he takes them and makes a kinyan on them, then he has, in a sense, yeush. He can't say at that point, oh, I didn't really mean to give them up, because already the other party is engaged with them and picked them up. He knows they're gone at that point. He can't be stalling any longer, because at that point, the guy's taking possession of them. It's too late. So that's why up until that point, he has a right of retraction. After a point in time, he can't retract anymore because he's already taken possession of them. Grah notes over here that he thinks that the Gemara's diuk is only true with regards to the case of the wall collapsing, not by the case of the poel. Because you could make the same diuk with regards to the poel as you did by the wall. The Gemara only makes it by the case of the wall. The truth is that the Gemara assumes that you could extrapolate, and it would be very easy. The Grah brings, aval b'seifa b'poel afilu b'lav hachi. With the poel, it doesn't matter. He says the Rashba, but the tour, aval aran v'ari chukim. Tamo shel Rashba, kevan dechayav lo maknile. So he says that the Rashba and the tour paskin that the poel is different. Why is the poel different than the wall? Because by the case of the poel, he's actually obligated to pay him. If he doesn't pay him, he's going to be in violation of an Isur Doraita, v'lo talin, pulat zrechir itcha ad boker. So in the face of being chayav and Isur Doraita, there he will absolutely relinquish control over it. And when he offers it to him and he takes it, he doesn't withhold any rights, because he doesn't want to be at risk for being in violation of the Isur Doraita. So even though you could argue, Ishtemute kamishtamet, that he's also trying to delay over there, we do not say that according to the Rashba the Tur. On the other hand, the Ran and the Nemuke Yosef disagree and say that the Seifa is just like the Reisha of the Seifa, meaning that just like the wall, so too is the Poel, and the Din is no different. So here you have a Machloket in the Rishonim, whether this is extrapolable to the Poel's case. Where the Nemuke Yosef and the Ran say, yes, it's the same case exactly. And the Rashba and the Tur say, no, a Poel has a different mitigating factor, which is the Isur Doraita that's hanging over the owner or the hirer of these workers. And therefore, he is willing to give up control, even though he's really trying to stall for time. Right now, Sucher Lasotimo B'Tevenu B'Kash B'Tzricha. We need both of these cases, both by Poel and by the case of the wall in the Gina. Diashmino Nahach Kamaita. If you only told me about the case of the wall, Tichi Kamarlei Higiucha Ein Shomimlo. When he says, it's yours, we don't listen to him. Deshum Deleitle Agra Gabei. Because the owner of the Gina has no outstanding obligations with his neighbor. So he's not offsetting any obligation. It's simply a new undertaking that he's going to have to do to clear out the stones. In the case of the Poel, we might say, when he says, take it, we listen to him, because people say, that when it comes to someone who owes you money, take whatever you can get your hands on. Meaning that if they're going to pay you, even the word pare over here, Rashi translates as subim. Even if they're going to give you like bran or something awful that can't be liquefied easily for cash or monetized for cash easily, nevertheless, just take it. Because you never know if the guy's going to show up with the money the next time. So maybe you would say to the poel, when he says, higiucha, we listen to him because we don't want the poel to be out of his wages. Just take what you can get your hands on right now. So that's why we have the latter half that says it doesn't work. V'yashminan d'ocha. If we told you the case of the poel, there, once the poel accepts it, then we say that the guy can't come back and reverse it. Over here by the case of the wall, where there's no outstanding obligation, maybe you can back out of it. Because ishtemute, ishtamitle. So tricha. Therefore, we need both cases to teach you both halves of this, because one would not be obvious from the other. And that might be what's compelling the Rashba to differentiate between the cases, because you see here, by the worker, there are other mitigating factors. First of all, there's an outstanding obligation. And the worker might want the money right away and want his obligation discharged. And the owner also has an obligation to pay him. Those factors might play in over here and cause it to happen faster, or maybe we won't allow him to reverse it because of that. So that's why we need the poel to be explained separately or to be explicitly mentioned in the Mishnah, even though we already have the case of the wall and vice versa too, that there are certain chumrot in each case or kulot in each case that make us not automatically extrapolate one case to the other, and that's why we needed both of them. All right. Ein shomim lo. We don't listen to him. Vatanya shomim lo. We have a braita that says we do listen to him. So Amar Rav Nachman. So how do we reconcile between the two different Tanaic works? One which says that shomim lo, and one that says ain shomim lo. So when he says to Puel, take what you worked in for your wages, our Mishnah says ain shomim lo, we don't listen to him. We have a bright that it says we do listen to him. Amar Rav Nachman, kasha kam bishalo kam bishal chaviro. Depends where the worker is working. We'll see in a second, this is a little difficult. But the differentiation that he's making here is that if he hires the workers to work in his own field, then he's obligated to pay their salaries, and he can't say, take what you're working in, he has to pay them the salaries. The other hand, if he hires them to work in his friend's field, then he can say to them, take what you worked in. Because he doesn't seemingly have a direct obligation, they didn't work for him in the end, they worked for his friend. But Amalei Rabo the Rav Nachman, again, here the Girsa might be Rava to Rav Nachman, because Rava is a Talmud of Rav Nachman, so it would make sense that it's Rava asking Rav Nachman. My time, Amalei Agralech B'shel Chaveiro, Namischaro Alav. Wait a minute. Why is the reasoning in his own yard or his own work? He doesn't have a right to say to the workers, Higiyucha, just take whatever is here, because he has an obligation to towards their salaries. Well, the same is true B'shel Chaveiro, Namischaro Alav. When you hire workers to work in someone else's field, you're obligated to pay those workers. D'tanya. Socher ta poel lasot b'shelo. He hires the workers to work in his own property. Ve'ereo b'shel chaveiro. And he shows them instead his friend's property. Notein lo scharo mishalim. He has to pay them fully. He's fully obligated to reimburse them. V'chozer notel mi balabait mashehenen oto. And then he can go back and get reimbursed from the person who they worked for. But he doesn't have a right then just to throw them onto his friend. He accepted this salary obligation. Now, in a case where he doesn't accept the salary obligation, then you could answer in that way. But in a situation or a circumstance where he hired the workers, it's irrespective of where they work in the end. It doesn't matter if they work in his property or show them a different property. The obligation is on him to provide their salaries. So why should he be able to say higiyucha? Why should he be able to say that in that case? Tosfot even sharpens the question and says, if you really believe, according to the Hava Mina here, that there's a difference between Shalo and Shel Chaveiro, then why does he have to say higiyucha? Just take what you worked on. He could say, I'm not paying you guys at all. You didn't work for me at all. I mean, that's basically what the Gemara's Hava Mina is. If you work for someone else, then you're not obligated to deal with them. So just tell him, I'm not dealing with you guys. I have no obligation towards you guys. Says, I don't know why that's not the Hava Mina of the Gemara. Alright, the Gemara wanted to be more reasonable so that he at least stood by his word and he gave them payment, but maybe he's not obligated in wages. Just give them what they worked in and say, take whatever you want from here, but I'm not paying you. Gemara says, in the end, that doesn't work, because when you hire somebody, you're responsible for their wages, unless explicitly stated otherwise, you're obligated for their wages, even if you put them in someone else's property. El Amar of Nachman Lokasha Kan Bishalo, Kan Bishal Hefker. The difference is between whether you showed them to work in your property, oh, you show them to work in an area that was hefker. So Rashi over here notes, Rav Nachman the Tameh. This is Rav Nachman the Shitato. Damar le'el, that he said back on Daf Yud, back on Daf Yud, a magbia mitziya lechaveiro. Person who lifts up a lost object on behalf of his friend, lo kana chaveiro. It doesn't work. Meaning that you don't acquire it on behalf of your friend. Nimsa she'ein pulato alav. So you see from this that whatever action they take does not reflect back or does not assign back to the original party. Vein kan bal talin. Therefore, there's no obligation and no sur of bal talin. So in a case where he shows them to work on his own property, he's subject to bal talin. He has to pay the wages of these workers. On the other hand, when he puts them into hefker, in that case, he doesn't have any obligation vis-a-vis them because whatever they do with the hefker is their own action and does not automatically get transferred back as if it is the owner's issue. Because if they picked up a mitzia for you, that wouldn't work. So what happens is that their actions are really only working for themselves, not working for you. So when they're working in hefker, they're basically working for themselves. They're not doing anything that has any relationship to you whatsoever, and therefore there's no violation of bal talin. You have to assume here that the balabayit that is having these workers work know that they're working in hefker, that they're not working on his stuff, but it's obvious that they're working in hefker, and therefore in their own minds, they have in the back of their mind this possibility that the balabayit might not pay them cash, might end up paying them from this stuff, because in the end they're not working for the balabayit or with the balabayit's things. Eitva Rova the Rav Nachman. So now Rava poses a question to Rav Nachman, which also indicate that probably the previous case also was Rava asking Rav Nachman, Mitziat Poel Le'atzmo. When a Poel finds something, it's his. Eimatai, Bizman Shar Marlo, Balabait, Nakeshi Mi Ayom, weed with me today, O Adori Mi Ayom, hoe with me, turn over the soil with me today. Avali Marlo, Asen Imi Melachayom, if he just generically says, work for me today, Mitziato Le Balabait. That means that anything the Poel does is an extension of the Balabait and basically becomes the possession of the Balabait. So you see here that it's not so clear that when you work with Hefker, that it's automatic, that it has nothing to do with the person who hired you. Yes, in a case where he hired you for a particular type of work, then if you find a mitziah, you get to keep the mitziah because you're not working for the Balabait. You might have to reimburse him for the time that it took to pick up the mitziah. But the mitziah belongs to the Poel. Poel would have to reimburse the Balabait for the time it took for him to go and get the Aveda because he left his job for that period of time. But he's not obligated to give the mitziah to the Balabait because the mitziah was not part of his job description, and therefore he gets to keep it for himself. He's an independent individual and can keep it for himself. On the other hand, if the Balabait hires him generically, anything you do today, or I have work for you today, then anything he does is work for the Balabait. So then when he picks up a mitziah, that's also work for the Balabait, and the Balabait will get acquisition of that. So in this case too, why don't you say the same thing? Okay, he put the workers to work in things that were hefker. But that does not automatically mean that it doesn't reflect back to the Balabait. It depends how he hired them. If he hired them in a manner that says, come and work for me, and then he puts them in hefker, then when they lift up the hefker, it becomes the owner's property or possessions, and it should be chayav to compensate them. Amar Rav Nachman Lokasha, kan behagba'ah, kan behabata. Depends on how he engaged them in work. In order for the hefker to become the possession of the Balabait, then it would have to be in a situation in which you make a kinyan. You have to do something that takes it from being hefker to being yours. So that's hagba'ah. Lifting it up would do that. So depending on the type of work they are doing, that would differentiate whether they are actually now engaged on behalf of the Balabait or not engaged in the Balabait. If they're doing things that involve hagba'ah, lifting, then they acquire whatever it is they're working with for the Balabait, and now it becomes the Balabait's problem because they're working in his stuff now, and they're his po'alim, and he'll have to pay them, he's obligated to pay them. On the other hand, if they are working in a manner that does not engage the item be'kinyan, then it never becomes his item, it remains hefker, and therefore he's not responsible for the wages of people working with hefker, they worked with someone else's quote-unquote objects, and therefore he's not subject to lotalin, right? They're working as if it's their own stuff. But that's been a case where there's no kinyan. Rashi says over here, habata. The truth is that there are others who have a gears of chavata. Chavata means to pound or to put down. You can see Rashi over here suggests the difference between hagba'ah and habata is in a case where either he's lifting it up, that's hagba'ah, or the case of habata is either from the word habait, which means to see, that you are a shomer, that you hired him just to guard the area, to watch it, not to actually engage it. Or, in a case, l'ashlich ma'aliyah la'aretz. It's something that's on the roof. Say they used to dry things on the roof. And now they want to bring them inside. So how do you bring them inside? You push them towards the skylight, and it falls down into the house. Over there, you never magbia them. You're just pushing them towards that area. So you can work with them, which might be chavata. You're pushing them or banging them down. In that case, you never lift them. So you can engage in hefker in a manner which never gives you an acquisition in the hefker. In that case, then he does not become obligated in lotalim pulat chayit ad boker, and that's why he can say to them higiucha. That's the bright that it says shomim lo. We listen to him is in a case where he showed them to work in hefker. It's a case where they never made an acquisition on his behalf of the hefker. That means it remains hefker. You work in hefker. Basically, your payout is the hefker itself, and that's why we say when he says higiucha, he can say that to the poalim, take that stuff, it's all yours, it's not mine, you can take it if you want your wages from it. That is the way that Rav Nachman reconciles between the Braita and the Mishnah. In the Braita, Shomim Lo, he has a right to force them to take it because they're working with Hefker without a Kinyan. In our Mishnah, they're working in Hefker, but it's a case where they're making a Kinyan, so then it becomes his, and then he becomes obligated in Lo Talim Pulat Secher Idcha Ad Boker, because they're working with your stuff. So that's how he reconciles between the Mishnah and the Braita. But he did that by making a distinction in hefker between hagba'ah and habata. And on that, amarabo habata behefker tanaehi. Habata and hefker is actually a machloket tanaim as to whether that does not gain you a kinyan in the object. It's none. Shomrei Svichei Shvi'it. When it comes to Shvi'it, you're not allowed to, first of all, guard areas. You're not allowed to guard food. Everything is hefker. Number two is we have a significant problem for the Mikdash during that period of time, because the Mikdash needs produce from which to bring the only real korbanot that are mincha, that are obligations there, is the minchat omer, which is an obligation of the tzibur, as well as the shtei alechem. So those are items that if you do not keep your eye on them, in the end, they're going to be problematic if you don't, because there you have to harvest them, and you have to bring them into the Mikdash. So there we have, Shomrei Svichei Shvi'it, Notlim Scharan Mitrumat Alishka. The Tana Kama says that we pay them out of the Trumat Alishka in order to guard on behalf of the Hekdesh. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Harotzeh Mitnadevu. Person wants to do it and help out with Hekdesh, he can do it as a volunteer. V'shomer Chinam, and then he'll become a Shomer Chinam. Amrulo, Ata Omer Kain, if you say that, Ein Bayim Mishot Tzibur. They don't come from the Tzibur. So Tosfot over here, you can see, says, Pirashti b'sof Perek HaZahav. So I already dealt with this back at the end of Perek HaZahav, because there are significant problems with this. The two problems that you have here are, on the Shvi'it, you're not allowed to guard things. Something that is Shamur becomes a Sur, and according to the Balei Tosfot, they have even bigger Chiddush, that if it's Shamur, it's Asur b'Achila. Most Rishonim believe that if it's something Shamur, you're not allowed to be Shomeret. But that doesn't change the object itself. The object itself doesn't become peirot asurim. Tosafot believes that they become peirot asurim, and that's part of that Tosafot causes problems with regards to heter mechira. Because if you believe the mechira doesn't go through, and now the farmer's treating the property like private property, then he's shomer the property. If you believe, like the Balei Tosafot, that a shomer changes it into an achila asura, or the ochel becomes asur, then you have a significant problem. That's one issue that you have here. The second issue you have here is that Sfichim are Asurim. Sfichim are possibly, right. So the question of why are Sfichim Asurim Midoraita? Or in the Gemara of Pesachim, it makes it sound that Sfichim, at least some of the Sfichim, are only Asur Midorabanan. They're Gzeira Otu Sfichei Kruv, which might be Asur Deoraita. But you still have an Isur. And the requirement for bringing a Korban is based on the Pasuk in Yechezkel's Mimashke Yisrael. Something that a Jew himself could eat is mutar to put on the Mizbeach. If a Jew cannot eat it, meaning that it's something that's asur, then it can't go on the Mizbeach. And that's what you have a problem here. A person could not eat these items either because they were shamur, according to the Balei Tosafot, or according to the other Rishonim, they're svichim. So you couldn't eat them anyway. So how are they going on the Mizbeach? So that's what Tosafot says. I already spoke about this back on Nunchet Amud Aleph, where I discussed these issues as how is it possible that you have the Svichim over here. So the easiest way to deal with the Svichim is to rely on the Gemara in the fourth parak in Pesachim that it says that the Svichei Kruv are the only thing Doraita. And the question was, other Svichim are only Gzeira Derabanan. So if that's Gzeira Derabanan, then Mi Doraita it is Mutar, makes it a little easier to deal with, because here they could have waived their Din. The other case, what about Shamur? So Tosfot back on Nunchet Amud Aleph says, Ve'yesh Lamar. The guard never stopped people from going in. Well then, why hire a guard if he's not going to stop people going in? It says, so he deals with it by saying that it wasn't that he stopped them. He just simply informed them that this field was going to be used for the Omer. And then the people themselves walked away from it. They knew what was best to do in that case. Not that there was any force or shmira applied. He simply was like a billboard saying, this belongs to Hekdesh. And he just prevented people by doing it and informing them of the information, but not actually preventing them. So therefore, it's not considered to be shamur. You see over here, the Balei Tosafot in Nunchet Amud Aleph references you to Yevamot Kufchav Bet Amud Aleph, which is the Tosafot that speaks about shmira, and that guarding fruits would cause them to be asurim. Anyway, so that is one issue that we just have to address or get out of the way. The Gemara's assumption now is that we have a machloket here. My la b'hakam iflegei. The machloket between is the following. The Tanakama savar habata behefker kani. The Tanakama believes that if you are shomer hefker, you acquire it. I mean, that simply looking at hefker is enough to acquire it. Looking means that you guard it. You make it into yours, not by making any kinyan, but simply by demonstrating control over it. V'avile agra in v'lolo. So if Hekdesh pays him for his services, then his guarding is on behalf of Hekdesh. And then it becomes Hekdesh's property. Ilo, if not, then lo, it doesn't work. That's why you have to pay him. You must compensate him. Rabbi Yossi Savar Abata Befker Lo Kani. Rabbi Yossi says, what are you talking about? That doesn't work to acquire the Hefker. Therefore, if he guards it at his own volition, he doesn't get paid, it doesn't matter because his guarding of it doesn't make it his. Bichi Azle Tzibor Umayte. When the Tzibor goes out and then and cuts it, Hashtahu the Kazachibe. That's when the Kinyan happens. The Kinyan doesn't happen when you guard it. The Kinyan happens when you physically engage with the item. That happens when they come to harvest it for the Omer. Umata Omer. And then the end of the Mishnah is Mat Omer. According to you, Rabbi Yossi, then we'll have a problem, which is, Hachi Kamrile, Midvarecha Lidvarenu. If we follow your position in our position, Ein Omer Shtei Lechem by Michel Tzibor, then nothing would happen. If we allow people to watch it voluntarily, then according to our position, where if you do Abata, it becomes yours, then it's going to become the personal property of this individual, and then we're not certain that he's going to give it over to the Tzibor properly, or even the Tzibor can acquire it at that point. Amarova, no, that's not the way you have to explain the Machloket over here. The Kuli Alma Habata beHefker Kani. Everybody agrees that when you look at Hefker, you acquire it. Question is, do we believe that he will actually grant the full ownership over to Hekdesh? I mean, that when someone takes something personal and he gives his personal property into Hekdesh, do we believe that he donates it with a full heart and he makes it into the property of the Tzibor? Or does he kind of say, look, I'm giving it, it's mine, but I don't mind you using it? That's a huge problem because then the Tzibor is using private property. It's actually, we saw a machloket between the Tztukim and the Prushim with regards to donations towards the Korbanot HaTzibur. But you can make private donations. Do we assume that those private donations become problematic because those private donations people don't give over properly to the Tzibur? Or do they give it over? When they give it over, they relinquish their control to the Tzibur. So now here, that's the question. The Rabbanan Sabri Avinan Le'agra, we pay him. V'ilo cheshin and shem Elohim sereim yafeh yafeh. We pay him because otherwise we worry about the fact that he's going to actually give them over. So we prevent him from gaining ownership by paying him. If we didn't pay him, it would be his. So we pay him to prevent it from being his and make it into Hekdesh. Then we don't have to worry about whether he gave it or he didn't give it. Rabbi Yossi Savar, lo cheshina. Rabbi Yossi says, we don't worry about Shem Elohim Sereim Yafeh Ve'yafeh. Then, ma ata omer. So what's the end of the Mishnah? Hachi kamrule, midvarech ledvarenu. According to the way you're saying we don't pay him, based on our position, the cheshina and Shem Elohim Sereim Yafeh Yafeh, ain't omer shtei lechem by Michel Tzibur. Then there's a risk that the Shtei Lechem, then the Omer, will not come from the Tzibur's property, because we're not paying him, and we're not sure or certain that he's actually going to give over control or relinquish control to the Tzibur. Igadamre, some say just the opposite, that Rav Amar, the Kulei Alma B'Habat B'Efker, Lo Kani, that everybody agrees it doesn't work at all. So then what's the Machloket here? V'Alcha Chashinan the Balei Zro'ot Kamiflege. Question is, do we worry about strong men coming along here? The Tanakh Masavar, the Kinu Rabbanan, the Metivle Arbazuzei, they paid him from Hekdesh, Keiche Dilishmale Balei Zro'ot Velifreshu Minayu, so that these strong men that come along are going to listen to him. This is a phenomenon that we've discussed many times in Shas. It's definitely a phenomenon, still happens today sometimes, but it was very pronounced in the time of the Mikdash, which is that if the guy stands there and says, this stuff is mine, I'm protecting it, the guys would toss him out and take his property. They couldn't care less. If he says, I'm working on behalf of Hekdesh, oh, okay, we don't steal from Hekdesh, and they'd walk away. So here, people are willing to steal from their friend, would not steal from Hekdesh. So by paying him from Hekdesh, they empower him to say, I'm working on behalf of Hekdesh. He says, I'm working on behalf of Hekdesh, the guys walk away from it. Even though they'd steal from anybody else, they won't steal from God. They won't steal. So you tell him it's Hekdesh, won't work, right? The Mishnah in the Dorim, where the thieves come into the house, and he starts telling him everything. I was makdish this to the king, I was makdish this to the Migdash. Oh, it's Hekdesh. They walk out. Meantime, they're like in his house, taking everything out of his house. Hekdesh, they put up their hands and walk away. But it's the same phenomenon that people considered or were more worried about Dine ben Adam le Makom than ben Adam le Chaviro. So that phenomenon the Chachamim are trying to deal with. Rabbi Yossi Savar, lo takinu. They didn't make such a takana. Umata Omer. So now, what is the response of the Chachamim to Rabbi Yossi? Now, Hachi Gamrile. This is what they say. Midvarecha lidvareinu. From your position that he doesn't have to take compensation or there was no takana, lidvareinu, where we think there is a takana. So he, in the case where there is a takana and he refuses to take the money, in bayim mishel tzibur, then they're not coming from the tzibur anymore. Because if the Rabbanim were metake in the four zuz from the Trumat HaLishka, and in the end they don't pay him, then that money stayed in the Trumat HaLishka. That means that it stays there, and it's private money that is staying in the Tzibur's money. Because the takana was that he should get paid. When he waived getting paid, that money, private money of his, is still sitting in the Trumat HaLishka, and that could be used to buy korbanot or other things. And then you have private money that is buying the korbanot at Tzibur, which will be problematic. So, and so we have a corroboration that Rabbi Yochanan also learned that the machloket here between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi was about this issue. Habata doesn't work. And the question was about Balei Zerot, prevent these strong men from coming in and grabbing the property during Shvi'it. We wanted him to be engaged by Hekdesh so that they would walk away. And then the problem then becomes, if you don't pay him, Rabbi Yossi says, there was no such takana, and therefore you don't have to pay him, the guy can do it on a volunteer basis. According to the Chachamim, who say there was such a takana, and he does it for free, then you have the problem. When he waives his salary is remaining in the Trumat HaLishka and can cause problems. Alright, next Mishnah. Amotzi zevel derishut harabim. Someone who takes out, I wouldn't say trash over here, more likely over here it's dealing with dung. He's taking his fertilizer's dung, he's putting it out to Rishut HaRabim. Hamotzi, the person who is taking it out, takes it out. Mizavel. And the one who wants it for fertilizer has got to remove it immediately. Meaning that you do not have a window of time in which to leave it in the Rishut HaRabim. It's got to go into the Rishut HaRabim and out of the Rishut HaRabim. Basically from one hand to the next. You pile it up there, he comes and takes it away. You can't leave it there. Ein Sharim Tit Birshut HaRabim. You cannot soak the plaster or to make the plaster and soaking it in the Rishut HaRabim. Ve'en lovnim levenim. And you can't also make bricks in the Rishut HaRabim. Rashi says they used to dig the molds out of the ground and then pour the cement into them to have them dry there and become bricks. You don't have a right to utilize Rishut HaRabim for these matters because it's a encumbrance on the Rishut HaRabim, on the people of the Rishut HaRabim, where you're taking up space, you're blocking their thoroughfare and access, and you don't have a right to do that. Aval, but we do have a right to do is govlim tit b'Rishut HaRabim. You're allowed to mix the plaster to be used in the Rishut HaRabim. It's the equivalent of today, where you have people working on a house or on something next to the Rishut HaRabim. When the trucks pull up with the cement mixer going, that you can do, or you can mix the cement quickly outside on the Rishut HaRabim and then take it into the house to work with. What you can't do is start making your cement outside on the Rishut HaRabim. So if it's something that's going to be immediately used in the construction process, that we allow you to do. Aval lovit levenim. We don't allow you to mix levenim. It's a little strange statement over here because you already said ve'en lovnim levenim, that you can't make the bricks before. So over here it would sound like you can't govlim the levenim. Even though you can be govel tit, you can't be govel levenim. Va'bone b'shut rabim, person who builds something b'shut rabim to then take into the private domain. Ha'mevi avanim, mevi va'bone bone. Then in that case, you have to bring the objects that you need for the building right there, and the person who's building has got to take them right away. If you do damage, you got to pay for the damage that's done. So even though in these cases you have rights to put certain things down or to do certain things, we give you a window to do it. It's a very short window. You bring the stones there, and then you got to pull them out right away. Like, for instance, where they come and they drop off a pallet of cinder block that you're going to use for the building. You can put them down, and then you got to start using them right away. You can't just leave them there. But if somebody gets injured by them, you are responsible for those injuries. So even though you have permission to utilize the Rishut HaRabim in this short duration, you still are responsible for anything that happens then during that short duration. Shimon Gamliel Omer, Af Mitakein Hu Et Melachto Lifnei Shloshim Yom. So Shimon Gamliel opens up a wider window of opportunity and says you have 30 days. In order to build, the person has to gather all the raw materials together. So he's dropping off pallets of wood. He's dropping off pallets of cinder block, pallets of cement mix. He's putting all that stuff down in front of the house in order to do the work. You have a 30-day window in which to place the items down there because to prepare for the building process. Not like the Tanna Kamma says you put it down, it's got to be used right away. You have a 30-day window to stage the building process and to begin the building process. It also seems that from this, ve'enu chaya benizikin, that he's responding to the last statement of the Tanna Kamma. The Tanna Kamma says, not only do you have a short duration, but you also are chayav for anything that happens. Shimon Gamliel is responding to two things. First of all, it's not a short duration, it's a 30-day window. In addition to that, that permission also exempts you from any damage that's done. Meaning that the fact that you have a right to put it there also means that you're not chayav. Meaning that that's why you have a right to put it there. Once you have permission to put it there, then you're not going to be responsible if it does damage because you had the right to put it there. It's as if it's your property for that period of time. Right, so now the Gemara says, Lema matznitin de loka Rabbi Yehuda. Sounds like our Mishnah is a lot like Rabbi Yehuda. De Tanya, because we had a braita back in Baba Kama. We had Omer. B'shat otzat zvalim, Adam motzi zvalo de reshut rabim, b'tzovro koshloshim yom, kedei shei nishof, b'raglei Adam u'raglei be'ema. So he says, wait, when it comes to piling out dung in the reshut rabim, every 30 days you're allowed to restack it or repile it in the reshut rabim. Why would you want it in the reshut rabim? It's so people stomp on it and walk on it. So when people walk on it and the animals walk on it, that's the processing of the dung. That's what makes it into a better fertilizer. And so you're allowed to do that in the reshut rabim. And you can keep piling it up and putting it there. So you have two things. First of all, Rabbi Yehuda seems to think that you could leave it out there for a duration. You don't have to put it in and then take it out right away. That's number one. The second thing is, Shamanat Kain, Inhil Yoshua Yisrael at Aretz. That was one of the conditions that Yoshua, when he brought the people in, there was a social contract between them that people had the right to use the Reshut Rabim in this way. That would seem to indicate a second thing, which is that if someone gets damaged, you would not be chayav because you have permission to put it there. So there are two things in Rabbi Yehuda's statement that seemingly make it impossible for him to be the author or the position upon which our Mishnah is based. The first of which is you have a long duration to leave them out there. And number two is you have permission. And seemingly, the permission gives you the right to be exempt from any damages that happen. Afilu teima Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says, no, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Moder Rabbi Yehuda, shem hezik, chayav b'shalim. The jump that we made in the end, that just because you have permission means that you are patur, maybe not. Maybe in a case where you have permission, that's all you have. You have permission, but you're still responsible. Similar to what the Tanakama said in our Mishnah, which you have a short duration to leave it there, but whatever permission you have, like to mix the teeth and all that sort of stuff, you're still chayav if something happens. So let's say the same thing about Rabbi Yehuda. Vatznan, we also have a Mishnah in Baba Kama that seems to indicate otherwise, which is, Moder Rabbi Yehuda ben Er Chanukah Shupatur. In the case where you have a gamal that is loaded with straw, and then the straw catches fire from the workshop of whatever artisan or craftsman is working there. We said over there that it's the responsibility of the workman or the craftsman because he put the fire outside. And when he puts the fire outside, he's responsible because he put it out in a risky place where people in Reshut HaRabim could catch fire and the gamala goes by. That's a frequent occurrence that he should have anticipated and therefore he's responsible. But in a case where he puts his Ner Chanukah outside, then he's not chayav. Because he does it with permission. So it seems to be that Rabbi Yehuda believes when you have permission that you are patur. My lav reshut the beitin. Beitin gave you the right to put your Ner Chanukah outside. Therefore, you are patur. So say the same thing over here. Yoshua gave you permission to do this. Therefore, you are patur. Where it says, no, it's different by Ner Chanukah. That's reshut the mitzvah. Over there, the permission is not because of beitin. It's not a social contract. But rather, the mitzvah demands that you place it out there. And since it's the obligation of the mitzvah to place it outside, your exemption comes from the fact that you're doing a mitzvah, not because you have the permission of Beit Din. But in the case of permission of Beit Din, maybe the din would be different. And that's what he's saying. By Ner Chanukah, you're patur because you're doing the mitzvah. But by the case of the Zvalim, since you just have permission of Beit Din, the reason you're not patur is because it's Beit Din. It's not a mitzvah to put your Zvalim out there. You just have a right because Beit Din granted you that right. But that right also means that you are responsible for anything that happens. Vatanya, wait a minute. Don't we have a bright that says, Kol elu she'amru mutarim v'kalkel b'reshut harabim? All these things where we say you have a right to utilize the reshut harabim, to ruin, quote-unquote, the reshut harabim, imezik chayav l'shalim. The Tanakhama says if you do any damage, you're chayav to pay. Rabbi Yehuda, poter. Rabbi Yehuda says you are patur. So over here, it seems almost explicit that Rabbi Yehuda says that when you have permission, not only do you have permission and you can do it, your permission and you now have an indemnification, which is you can now put it out there and you're not responsible for damage that happens in that case. It makes sense to say, matnitan deloka Rabbi Yehuda, that our Mishnah is not authored by Rabbi Yehuda or is not based on the position of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda clearly believes if you have permission, then you don't have any liability that is associated with it. Tosfot over here asks an interesting question. He says, Vim Tomar, why don't you say, Amai lo mishani matnitin below shat hotzat zvalim v'divrei hakol? Says, even Rabbi Yehuda, in the Gemara in Baba Kama, where he says that you're allowed to put out the Zvalim, he says that's only true b'shata Zvalim, at the time that people normally put out Zevel into the Rishut HaRabim. In that time period, you have permission to do it. Shalom b'shata Zvalim, in a time when it's not the common practice to put it out, there you don't have permission. So it's just, you could solve the problem by saying our Mishnah is a case, Shalom b'shata Zvalim. Once you do that, then Rabbi Yehuda could be the author of our Mishnah as well, because even Rabbi Yehuda agrees in that time period that you are Chayav. So Tosfot is bothered by that. He says, "Ve'yesh lomar yikadocha pshitulei da'irish lo b'shat tzat zvalim." Says that our Mishnah was clear that it's not in the case of shat zvalim. Nevertheless, can't go like Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning that we saw that Rabbi Yehuda has two issues, which is that Rabbi Yehuda allows you to pile it out there every 30 days. Plus, we said that he says you are not responsible. All these cases where you got permission, you are also patur. And so that you can't solve. That's one way that Tosa deals with. Then Tosa brings the second answer, Odish Lamar. The Metnitan Mashma the Ari Bishat Otsat Zvalim. By definition, our Mishnah is talking about a case of Otsat Zvalim, because Miktaniya Mizavel Mizavel, that the person who's going to take it out of their Shut HaRabim is going to use it as fertilizer right away. So that is the Shata Zvalim. So by definition, our Mishnah is talking about the same case as Baba Kama, and that answer won't work. But the Nafka Mina between them is what you think Rabbi Yehuda holds. According to the second way Tosfot explains it is, Enochanami, maybe Rabbi Yehuda would agree in a case that Shalosh Shata Zvalim, number one, that you would be Chayav and you'd be responsible, and maybe also you don't get the 30-day window, because that's only B'Shat Hutzat Zvalim. But Shalosh Shata Zvalim, you'll be, number one, you won't get the 30-day window, and number two is, you'll be Chayav and responsible for it when you put it into Rishut HaRabim. And what you can argue is, and this is what he says over here, Mishum Deikal Amemer Dematnitan Eitza Tova Kamash Malan. So then, what is the story of the duration over here? The duration, Rabbi Yehuda says you have 30 days. Our Mishnah says you got to take it out right away. Why is it saying you take it out right away? It could say you could leave there as long as you want. You're just responsible for it. So the answer is that it's giving you good advice, the Mishnah. The Mishnah is giving you good advice that if you put it there, take it out quickly, because otherwise you're going to be responsible for it. It's not demanding that you take it out right away. It's rather giving you advice. The best way to deal with this is to remove it right away. Because if you don't, anything happens, you're going to be responsible for it. So it might be that the Mishnah here, in the end, is not giving you a duration. It's simply telling you that you're responsible. And in being responsible, the best way to deal with that is to get it out of there quickly. But not that there's a demand that it be taken out. Simply, if you leave it there, you're going to have to pay for it if you leave it there. So now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Abaye, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, v'Rabbi Shimon, they all believe that when the Chachamim give you permission to do something, that permission is only valuable if it makes you patur. If you get permission and then you're chayav, then what did their permission do for you? Oh, you're allowed to use the Rishut HaRabim for this? Great. But if you're still chayav, what do they do in helping you to use the Rishut HaRabim? If you used it improperly, you'll be chayav. If you're using it properly, you're also chayav. So what's the difference? So they all believe that once the Chachamim granted you permission, that permission also indemnifies you, meaning it says you are patur in that case. Rabbi Yehuda had Amran. Rabbi Yehuda is our case here by the Zvalim, where he says clearly, kol elu shamro, all these cases where you got permission, you are also patur. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the Tanan. We have a Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, af metakein hu et melachto lifnei shloshim yom. That's how we read our Mishnah, that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel argues on the Tanna Kamma in two ways. He argues on the Tanna Kamma first, that you have 30 days and not a short duration. And number two is that he argues on the fact that if you do it, you are patur versus the Tanna Kamma who thinks you are chayav. Now, truthfully, if you read like Tosafot, that even the Tanna Kamma doesn't think that there's any duration. You can leave there as long as you want. Then the key difference between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Tanna Kamma is whether you're chayav and patur. The Tanna Kamma believes you are chayav no matter how long you leave it out there. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel gives you a 30-day window where you are exempt. And that would be the machloket between them, because even the Tanna Kamma is just giving you advice. Get it out of there quickly, because you are responsible. But not saying you must get it out of there. He would agree with Rabbi Shimon, you can leave it there whatever you want. You're just going to be responsible. In that case, it's very clear then that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is arguing on the point of whether you're chayav when you leave it out there. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's window is exactly for that reason, to tell you that you are patur during that window. Rabbi Shimon, what's the case of Rabbi Shimon? The Tanan, Rabbi Mishnah, Aya, Mamido, Baliyah. צריך שיהיה תחתיו מעזיבה שלושה טפחים ובקירה טפח. So here we're talking about putting an oven inside of your house. It's discussed in Baba Kama and Baba Batra. Again, we're going to get to it again. But you have permission to put in an oven into your house. But there are zoning laws. And the zoning laws require that you have a certain amount of clearance above the oven, as well as a certain amount of protection underneath the oven. Because otherwise, you could cause fires. So in order to prevent fires, there were zoning laws. The zoning laws, which is not mentioned here, we only have the part of the Mishnah that is relevant to us over here, but the Mishnah that says that if you put an oven downstairs, you have to leave clearance above the oven between that and the ceiling, otherwise it gets too hot and it could catch fire. Here we're talking about the upstairs. If he puts the oven upstairs, the floor thickness or the plaster on the floor has to be a certain thickness to prevent it from catching fire down below on the boards that are beneath it. And so here it says, you need plaster that's 3 tefachim thick in order to protect against their fire hazard. Bikira, which is a lighter form, it doesn't get as hot. It's more like a stove top than a oven. So there, tefach, you only need a tefach. V'im hizik, mishalem ma shehizik. If you damaged, then you have to pay for damaging. So the zoning laws are a requirement upon you to act in this manner. But even if you do this and then it catches fire, you have to pay for it. So the zoning laws are a demand that the neighbors can make on you to put it in this manner. But even if it catches fire, you're still responsible. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo amru kol hasharim alalu elo shem izik patur min lishalem. The whole point of having the zoning laws is if that you comply with the zoning laws, then it's an accident and then you're not chayav. And so therefore Rabbi Shimon agrees here again, permission, the zoning laws, if you abide by that which Beit Din demands, then you are exempt. You do not have to pay. So again, all three of them are of the same position in this idea that once you have permission, then you are considered to be patur. Tana Banan, we have another braita here. Hachatzav. We're going to have a number of professions over here. And the braita is going to speak about these professions in a sequential order, in the order that their work is done. The chatzav is the one who quarries it from the mountainside, the stone. The next profession is the satat. The satat is the one who chisels and squares out the block. After it's been detached from the mountain, the satat is the one who actually shapes the stone once it's been quarried out. Then after the satat, you have a chamar. A chamar is the hauler who takes it from the quarry to whatever location you're going to use it. Then after the chamar, there's a katef. Katef is the guy who actually carries it on his shoulder. He's the one who takes it from the long hauler to the short haul. He takes it that final leg and takes it to where the building is. Then the katef gives it to the banai. The banai is the builder who's actually going to place it on the wall. The equivalent of a bricklayer, not exactly the bricklayer, because we have an adrichal. The end is the adrichal. The modern term for adrichal is an architect. But over here, the adrichal is the one who actually places the stone down. He makes sure that the stone is set properly. So there is the banai who actually puts it up and puts it on the wall, but the adrichal is the one who's actually setting the stone. So the bricklaying is done by two different parties. So this is the progression of the work that is being done over here. So now they're bringing a stone from the quarry all the way to the building to be placed in the wall. So now here we go. Hachatzav shemasar lesatat. If the quarrier gave it over to the chiseler, hasatat chayav. The chasatat is now chayav. For either, if it does damage the stone while he's dealing with it, or if he breaks it, then he's responsible to replace it. Hasatat shemasad hamar. If he then takes the chiseler and gives it to the long hauler, to the donkey driver, hachamar chayav, then he's responsible for it. Again, if it breaks or if it does damage, he's responsible. Hachamar shematzad lekataf. If the donkey driver gives it to the one who's going to carry it for the final leg, Hakataf chayav, if it does damage, or if it's damaged, then the short hauler is chayav. Hakataf shemasar lebanai, once he gives it over to the builder, habanai bechayav, he becomes responsible if it does damage, or if it is damaged. Habanai shemasar leadrichal, the banai who's now placed it and he's given it over to the adrichal to straighten or set it in place, adrichal chayav, he becomes responsible. V'miniach even ale dimus. If the stone is now placed in the wall, it's now fixed in place, vezika, and then it does damage, kulan chayavim l'shalem. All the parties are responsible all along the way. Or it says, v'tan, you have a bright, acharon chayav, only the last one is chayav, that would make the most sense. The one who set the stone is responsible for it sitting on the wall. If it collapses or falls over, he should be the one that is responsible, v'kulan p'turim, and all the others are exempt. Lokasha, kan b'schirut, kan bekablanut. makes a difference on how they are parties to this. If they are schirim, which means that they are all independent craftsmen that are working over here, then as you pass it from one craftsman to the next craftsman, that craftsman becomes responsible for the work. And then if they're doing this in a kablanut, which is that they together jointly agreed that they're going to put up this wall, then between them, they all contribute towards the wall being built. In that case, they are all responsible for the brick or anything that happens with it because they are together contracted to put the wall together. So when it comes to the case where he is chayav, it says, Kevin de kochohu anezek mutal alav. Since the adrichal is the final placer of the stone, and therefore it's his strength or his koach that's causing it, that's what is his responsibility. If it falls over, it becomes his responsibility, whatever happens, because an adam is mu'ad bi'odam, and therefore whatever he did, he's responsible for. In the case where they all are shutafim, they all are basically partners in this melacha, then when he puts the stone down on the wall and does damage, it is not the koach of the adrichal that is the responsibility here. Because after he put it down, it fell. So if it's while he's placing it, it falls, he's clearly responsible and singularly responsible. And that's what all these cases over here. How come in the case of the shutafim, where they're all responsible, they're still singularly responsible along the way? That's because it happened because of their koach. That something they did either damaged the stone or caused the damage. Therefore, they are responsible. Once it's put on the wall, everybody's koach is done. Everybody's job has been completed. When it falls then, you can't assign it directly to one of the parties. So then you have to assign it to whoever is responsible. In the case where they're partners, everyone is responsible. In the case where each job is independent, then the final placer of the stone is the one who's responsible for the stone when it falls over. So that's why, again, when they are shutafim, they are chayavim. Only after he's done with the placement. If it falls while he's placing it, then he's responsible because that's his koach. But once he's placed in the wall and finished, then it's all their responsibility because they did this as partners. If you are one company, when you dropped it along the way, then you as this partner in the job are responsible for what dropping it along the way because your co-op caused the problem. The company's going to charge you for dropping the stone. It's not like, oh, the company lost money. You caused the company to lose money, so you're going to be responsible. If the job is done, then there's a corporate liability and all of them are chayav. If it happens in the process and one of them is particularly responsible for it, that person will be charged for it and he'll have to replace it personally, not the corporation, because he personally caused the damage along the way. Only once all of their work has been done, that's when they all become responsible. Shtegi note, zu agav zo. You have two guardians that are next to each other, but they are tiered. One is higher than the other. Vayerek bentayim. And there is vegetation that is growing out of the, we'll call the retaining wall. So instead of there being like stone on the retaining wall, it's actually earth, the retaining wall. And now there are things growing out of it. Who does that belong to? Rabbi Meir Omer Shel Elyon, it belongs to the upper party. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shel Tachton, it belongs to the lower party. Amar Rabbi Meir Im Yirtze Elyon Likachet Afaro Ein Kan Yerek. The upper garden can excavate down and flatten this out with the lower garden. That means that all of the earth that's there is really his. So when it's growing out of the side, it's just his earth that is providing for those vegetations. The lower party can landfill his. He can fill in his garden and raise it to the level of the upper garden. If he does that, then there's no yerek there because there's no airspace left. So again, each of them has a position as to why it should either belong to the upper party or the lower party. Amri Rabbi Meir, Machar Shishnehem Yecholim Limchot Ze Al Ze. Since each one of them could stop the other party from entering into the property, Roim Eichan Yerek Ze Chai. We have to look at where it's growing from. So either you have to view this as being the major reason behind Rabbi Meir's position because of Rabbi Huda's response to him. Rabbi Meir says in the bottom line, since both of us have a good position, you have to look at where the item is nourished from. And the karka is the ikar, where it's nourished from. And that's the determining factor. And that's the major reason for Rabbi Meir. The Meiri does bring down here with regards to this Mishnah an alternate girsa that says Rabbi Yossi. And that would make a lot of sense then, because then you have a third opinion here. You have Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and then Rabbi Yossi's opinion, which is his third opinion, and you don't have to reconcile it with Rabbi Meir's previous position, where he seems that he's giving two different reasons for what's happening in the Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Shimon. Whoever the upper party can reach down and take it out, that belongs to him. Vashar shel tachton, and the remainder belongs to the lower party. So what's interesting over here is, what is Rabbi Shimon's psak? Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, we know what their positions are. Rabbi Yehuda believes that it is belongs to the lower party. Rabbi Meir believes that it belongs to the upper party. Rabbi Shimon comes along and says, well, it has to do with where you can reach to. What does Rabbi Shimon believe? Rashi says that Rabbi Shimon really believes over here, Velyon, hu gufe afkure mafkir luhu, the gabei, shiginayu lo lito rishut likanes letok shavero velukot. So what Rashi seems to say is that Rabbi Shimon's position is really based on Rabbi Meir. He holds like Rabbi Meir that it all belongs to the upper field. But since it's beneath his dignity to ask permission to go get his yerek from the field down below, he only takes what he can reach from his upper field. And then whatever's below that, he's mafkir. He relinquishes control over. So according to Rashi, Mi'ikar Adin, Rabbi Shimon agrees with Rabbi Meir. And the reason that he takes the upper ones is because he can reach them. The lower ones, he's too embarrassed to get, so he is mafkir them, and that's why the lower party can get them. If you look in the Gra says just the opposite. It says, Nirbein, I mashma, d'b'ikar dina, svarvalei kikir Rabbi Yehuda. That underlying Rabbi Shimon's position is that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. That technically, it all belongs to the tachton. It all belongs to the lower guy. And Rabbi Shimon says, we just cede this stuff at the top to the guy who can reach them. Since he can reach them, then we cede them. So what you see here is a fundamental machloket between Rashi and the Gra, who brings the Rambam and other Rishonim, who seem to think otherwise, as to Rabbi Shimon's position. Does it rely on Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda? Rashi says it relies on Rabbi Meir with an exemption for the lower party because he's mafkirit. The Gra says the opposite way around. It all belongs to the guy on the bottom, with the exception of that top tier where the upper guy can reach it, which the tachton recently relinquishes to him. He says it's a nafgamina for Mechira and for Orla, who owns the property, and for Orla, we'll see later on, it has nafgamina as to whether we really hold like Rabbi Yehuda, or do we really hold like Rabbi Meir. So there are nafgamina, even though we paskin like Rabbi Shimon with regards to this particular din, in other dinim, there will be nafgamina, whether you think it's Rabbi Yehuda that's right, or Rabbi Meir that's right. And you have to determine that from Rabbi Shimon's position, is he relying on Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Meir? Rashi says he's relying on Rabbi Meir, and Gra says he's relying on Rabbi Yehuda. Amarova, bi'ikaro kuliyama lo plige del yon havi. The roots of the yerek, everybody agrees that it belongs to the upper party, because the roots are embedded in the karka. So say these are root vegetables, or these are items that are found beneath the ground. Anything beneath the ground clearly belongs to the upper party, because the lower party has no claim. The only claim the lower party has is that it's ba'avir shali. It's in my airspace. Well, if it's below the ground, it's not in his airspace. So it clearly belongs to the upper party, because the karka itself belongs to the upper party. Ki plige b'nofo. The question is with regards to things that are growing out of the ground, whether that's the vegetation itself, or whether that's the leaves that give access to the item that is below the ground. Once it's growing out, the airspace is now being utilized as well as the karka. Rabbi Meir Savar, Shadi Nofo Batar Ikaro. Rabbi Meir says you take the nof, the leaves, go after the ikar, that which is in the ground. And just like the roots in the ground belong to the balakarka, so too the leaves are attached to that ikar, to the core. Rabbi Yudha Savar, Lorminan Shadi Nofo Batar Ikaro. Bidu says we don't say that. The leaves are independent of that which is in the ground. What's in the ground belongs to the balakarka. What's out of the ground belongs to the balatachton, the balavir. The Tanya. Now here over here, there's an interesting girsa question. We have the Tanya. There is a Braita. You can see that in the Bach, as well as in the Balei Tosafot on the top of the next Amud, that there was a girsa. The Tanya nami gabi mecha chumem karki hai gavna. The girsa wasn't the Tanya, that this is a Braita. And the Balei Tosafot explained here is because the next case is not exactly like our case. It's similar, but not exactly the same. If you read Ba'azda the Tamayu, or you read the Tanya, it makes it sound like this Braita is exactly like the case of our Mishnah and the argument of our Mishnah. What the Balei Tosafot point out is it's just not true. It's not exactly like our Mishnah. Since it's not exactly like our Mishnah, they use the term, the Tanya nami gabi mecha chumemkar. By transactions, we have a similar Braita, ki hai gavna. That's similar, but not exactly alike. And what is that? Hayotze min hageza umin hashorashim. Here you have a machloket where a person sold a tree to a particular individual. He sold him one tree. When he sells him one tree, the Gemara in Baba Kama will see, says that you don't get any karka. You don't get any land with that. So he owns the tree. He doesn't own any of the karka. All of a sudden, out of this tree, either from the geza, from the trunk itself, or from the shorashim, from the roots, all of a sudden a new tree grows out. Who does that new tree belong to? Rabbi Meir says it belongs to the balakarka. It belongs to the owner of the land, Divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, min hageza shebel al ilan. If it's coming out of the trunk of the tree, it belongs to the owner of the tree. Min hashorashim, if it comes from the roots that are underground, shel balakarka. It comes out, it's still balakarka. So over here you see a similar machloket as to whether we say that you are shadar batar ikaro or not shadar batar ikaro. Rabbi Meir says everything goes out of the core. The core is the roots in the ground, and therefore the geza, which is also a derivative of the ground, everything belongs to the balakarka. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. Things that are underground belong to the balakarka. Things that are above ground belong to the balailan. So it's a similar type of machloket. It's not exactly the same. As the Balei Tosafot point out, that afilu amar Rabbi Yehuda, even if Rabbi Yehuda said, ayotzei min hageza shel balakarka, lo yikshe klum. Even if Rabbi Yehuda believed that what came out of the trunk belonged to the balakarka, you could still say that his position in our Mishnah would remain the same. And that is because when he sold him the tree, he sold him, number one, the tree, and that's it. The avir and the karka belonged to the balakarka. Over here, it's not like the avir and the karka are owned by different people. The balakarka owns the karka and the avir. The only thing he doesn't own is the tree now, because he sold the tree. So even if Rabbi Yehuda believed that everything belonged to the balakarka, that would not be in direct opposition to his position here. Because you can say over there, the avir and the karka belong to the balakarka. That's why everything belongs to the balakarka. But in our case, the avir and the karka are shared. They're different people that own them. And similarly, Rabbi Meir, in our case here, had he said that everything belongs to the balailan, it also would not be a question in our Mishnah, because he could say that when he sold them the tree, he sold them the tree plus the new branches or the things that come out each year. That's part and parcel of the tree. That's what he sold them. But in our case, where you're using the avir and the karka, he didn't sell them anything. It's his karka that's growing. It happens to be growing out onto the other avir, but it's his karka. So that's why he says, the Mishnah says, ki hai gavno, that it's similar in nature. And we're going to bring another braita now, and then the Gemara is going to make a tzrichuta between the braitot. Why do I need two braitot? Tosfos points out that the Gemara only asked the question about the two braitot, not about our Mishnah. Why don't we do a tzrichuta with our Mishnah? Why do you need a braita to tell you the same thing as a Mishnah? The answer is, it's not the same thing. That's why the Gemara doesn't even ask the question there. When we bring the two braitot down that are very similar, then that works. So what is the, why did the Gemara bring this? Because we see here a similar idea, that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir are favoring. Rabbi Meir favors the balakarka in this braita, like he does in our Mishnah. And Rabbi Yehuda favors the balailan, or the balavir, like he does in our Mishnah. But not that the cases are exactly alike. Vitanya, we have an additional braita, Nami Gabi Orla, by the case of Orla. Ki hai gavna, again, similar in nature. Ilana yotze min hageza umin hashorashim chaya varla divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, who thinks that everything belongs to the balakarka, then when there's a new tree that's coming out of the trunk, or there's a new tree coming out of the shorashim, it is exactly that. A new tree. That's why it belongs to the balakarka. It belongs to the balakarka because it's a new growth. It's a new tree. If it's a new tree, number one, it belongs to the balakarka. Number two is, you're chayav in orla. Now you're going to have to wait 3 years because it's a brand new tree. Even though it's attached to the original tree, it's still deemed to be a completely new tree. So even though it's exiting the geza, the trunk, nevertheless, it's considered to be a brand new tree. Min a geza patur. If it derives from the trunk, it is not chayav in orla. Min a shorashim, chayav. If it comes out of the roots, then you are chayav. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, which is that when it's beneath the ground and it's coming from the shorashim, that is deemed to be a new growth. And since it's a new growth, that is a new tree. It's a new tree, you're chayav in orla, plus that's not what you sold to the balailan. Again, the case here is a similar case where the karka is owned by one and he sold him a single tree on the karka. So now when the item exits from the tree, from the shorashim, everybody agrees it belongs to the owner of the land, and it's chayav in orla because it's a new tree. It's a completely new tree. The machloket is by the geza, but it comes out of the trunk. Is that deemed to be a new tree or not a new tree? Rabbi Meir holds that it belongs to the balakarka, and therefore it's deemed to be a new tree. And Rabbi Yehuda believes it belongs to the balailan, and therefore it's not a new tree, and therefore it's not chayav in or la. The two are connected. The Gemara in Baba Batra will differentiate what's considered to be a branch and what's considered to be a geza. Here you have a trunk, and a new trunk grows off of here. It's not that there's a branch coming off the trunk. It's clear that if a branch goes off the trunk, that belongs to the Bala Ilan, and it's not Chayav in Orla. Here we're talking about a whole new tree trunk grows out, and you see that sometimes, especially with olive trees. You could see that. Olive trees have multiple trunks that are coming out. It almost looks like three trees joined together at the bottom. So that's the machloket here. Betzriche, and we need both of these brightot. The Yashminon Kamaita, if you only told me the first one about selling the tree and who owns the new stuff. Bahakama Rabbi Yehuda Mishum de Mamona. Over there, that's a monetary transaction. That's why he says it belongs to the Bala Ilan. Of Olgabe Orla de Isura. Orla, which is an Isur de Uraita. Ema Modile de Rabbi Meir. Maybe over there, he agrees with Rabbi Meir that we're going to say Chayab in Orla. So one of them might rely on what is the normal way that people interact. When they sell the tree, what are they thinking? So that's Mamona, that's a monetary issue, and there you can make a decision to say that one belongs to the Bala Ilan, the trunk stuff, and the roots belong to the Bala Karka. On the other hand, when it comes to Orla, it's an objective standard that the Torah gives. It's Isura. So either because it's Isura Daraita, we have to go to Chumrah, or you have to say that it's an Isura, it's not governed by what we're thinking, it's governed by the facts. Is this a new tree, or is this not a new tree? So maybe we'd agree with Rabbi Meir. Vidmar Baha, if we only had the second case by Orla, Baha Kama Rabbi Meir. Maybe over there, that's why Rabbi Meir is Machmir and says everything's Chayav in Orla. Of a Baha'i, by the case of the transaction, Ema Modi Le the Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe you would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that it's a transaction and it goes by Lashon B'nei Adam or what people were thinking. Tzrichei, therefore we need both of them. So that's why we here the Tosfot proves from this that here you see that they both require both Braitot. The Gemara only asks about the Braitot, doesn't ask about our Mishnah. Because it's clear to the Gemara that the Braitot are different than our Mishnah. They're not exactly alike. They're Kihai Gavna. They are similar in nature. But the two Braitot are exactly alike. And therefore, why do you need both of them? And that's what we did the Tzrichuto for. Amar Rabbi Shimon, Kol Shel Yon Yechol Lifshot, Rabbi Shimon's Psak at the end of the Mishnah. Amre Debei Rabbi Yanai, Ubavad Shelo Yanes. That's only the case if he doesn't have to do acrobatics to get to it. Meaning that whatever he can reach naturally, that's fine. You know, if he's hanging himself by a rope from up top trying to get down there, that's already beyond the area that he is entitled to. By Ravanan, v'itema Rabbi Yirmiyah, magia le'nofo, ve'en magia le'ikaro. What happens if he's able to reach the leaves? For instance, you know, in things when plants grow, they go towards the sun. So even though they're growing out of the side here of the earth, the leaves might be facing upwards, because they're growing towards the sun. So he's able to reach the leaves, but he can't reach the core of the roots to pull it out. What's the din there? Now, the Gemara here has an alternate question. You can see the Aleph in the Groh who eliminates the Girsa. Magia le'ikaro v'ein magia le'nofo. What happens if he reaches the roots, but he can't reach the leaves? My, what's the din? Teiku. So the way that we have the Girsa, the question is in both directions. If he can reach one of the two items, what's the din? And the Gemara leaves it as a teku. The Gra, on the other hand, says that he thinks it's clear that if it's able to reach the roots and not the nof, he says, there's no question if he can reach the roots, which are his, because they're in his ground, then he can take it out. There's not a question. The only question is if he can reach the leaves without the roots, because the leaves are outside of the ground, and that's in the avir. That's the question. So according to him, he says, according to the Gra, the second question is not even relevant. There it's clear that he can take it out. The only question is if he can reach the leaves without the roots. The way we have it in our gears in the Gemara, the question's in both directions. If he can reach one of the two, what's the din? And the Gemara leaves it as a teku, unresolved. Amar Ephraim Safra, Talmido Shel Reish Lakish. So now we have Ephraim Safra, the Talmid of Reish Lakish. It's interesting because on yesterday's daf, we also had a Talmid of Reish Lakish speaking. We don't see very often Talmidim of Reish Lakish. Here we have two specific Talmidim of Reish Lakish who don't really appear anywhere else in Shas. Yesterday we had again with regards to the Maziva. Over there, what's the definition of Maitikra? Vestine Amar Bishimen Lakish. That Stine in the name of Reish Lakish says Lebachim, that they were boards, floorboards that they were putting up top. So there we had Stine in the name of Reish Lakish. Over here we have Ephraim Safra in the name of Reish Lakish. Mishum Reish Lakish, Halocha ke Rabbi Shimon. The Halocha is like Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah. Amrua kameh de Shvor Malka. They said it in front of Shvor Malka. This presents a great difficulty. Shvor Malka is mentioned a number of times in the Gemara. Shvor Malka was the name of the Persian king at the time. When the Gemara mentions Shvur Malka, we actually had it earlier in Baba Metzia. Most times the Gemara says that it's referring to either Rav Nachman or Shmuel. Shvur Malka means that you're like the king. That when you say something, it's as if the king said it, it's as if your halacha is accepted like a king's decree. Something along those lines. So most times in the Gemara, Rashi interprets it to be something that is allegorical in nature, which is not really talking about the Persian king, but you are similar to the Persian king. Over here, Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says, "Vilniyriya shvor malko mamash." Over here, it's talking about shvor malko himself, the king. Umelech paras sayau baki bidinim. He was the Persian king, and he was an expert in civil law in dealing with issues like this. So they said it to shvor malko. Amar lahu. Apirion amtiei to Rabbi Shimon. You should give an apirion to Rabbi Shimon. So now here again, apirion, the definition of apirion, Rashi says, chen shelanu. Rashi translates apirion, and he similarly translates porat, ben porat Yosef in Pashat Vayichi, that the word porat means chen. That means chen shelanu, that he's deserving of our grace, meaning that what Rabbi Shimon said was great. That's one way to explain it. Others explain it to mean, similarly the Ramban in the explanation of Ben Porat Yosef says something along these lines, which is it means pru or vu. Pru or vu means a pirion, it should become multiplied. And he's saying many more chachamim should be like Rabbi Shimon. We should have more people like him because he got it right. That's one way. Then the Oroch brings that the Lashon of a pirion is a pirya, which is Lashon Chozek, and strong. And it's the equivalent of Yasher Kochacha in Persian. It's the equivalent of saying Yasher Koach to Rabbi Shimon. He deserves a Yasher Koach because he said the right thing. So now, all of these, Shvor Malka is complimenting Rabbi Shimon. So now, what is going on in the Gemara that Shvor Malka is involved? The first thing we have to deal with is you're dealing with Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, who is a second generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. He's a Talmid Chover of Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael. Shmuel, who's a first, second generation Amora in Bavel. So it would be strange that Reish Lakish's psak over here, that the halacha is Rabbi Shimon, would be dependent on saying Amru Kamei de Shvor Malka, who Shmuel is sometimes called Shvor Malka in the Gemara. Be very strange to say it's referencing to Shmuel. And Shmuel is complimenting Rabbi Shimon. First of all, it's strange that he's complimenting Rabbi Shimon. And second of all, especially if it's the Talmud of Reish Lakish that's speaking over here, it's already a generation after Shmuel, it seems even less likely that he interacted with Shmuel or Shmuel was interacting on this point. So the fact that they said over that Reish Lakish said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, why should that influence Shmuel at all as to regards to the halacha? Shmuel could paskin on his own, like Rabbi Shimon. And so what does Reish Lakish's statement have to do with it? Number two is, why does Shmuel need to compliment Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Shimon's a Tana. Shmuel is an Amora. Either Shmuel says Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon or not like Rabbi Shimon. What's this idea that he said something great? So that's what drives Rashi over here and the Balei Tosfot to say, like Rashi, that we're talking about Shvor Malka himself, the real king and not Shmuel, because otherwise it's very hard to reconcile, number one, what is the Talmud of Reish Lakish doing being told over to Shmuel? Number two is, why does that matter to Shmuel? And number three is, why is Shmuel complimenting Rabbi Shimon? All of those seem strange. So then, Shvor Malka becomes the real Shvor Malka. Now the difficulty with that is, why are you sharing Torah Shbal Peh with Shvor Malka? The answer might be that it's in the realm of Dinim. The realm of Dinim might be relevant because the Shiva Mitzvah B'nai Noach might also be relevant to non-Jews as well. And therefore, this is an area of Halacha that is relevant to them. And he was a Baki in Dinim, and the Gemara is bringing down that, see, the greatness of our halachot in Baba Metzia, Baba Kama, and our Dinim, that even the non-Jewish kings who are Bikiim in Dinei Halachot, they complement our Tanaim who have halachot that are brought in our Mishnayot. So that would be the idea here. The other possibility is that there are sometimes that not only is Shmuel called Shvor Malka, again, Rav Nachman, sometimes and even Rabbah, is also called Shvor Malka, and then that would make it a little easier because then you're speaking about the Talmud of Reish Lakish speaking to someone later. But it still leaves you the problem of Rabbi Shimon, Halacha to Rabbi Shimon. The better way to say it then would be that when the last statement here is Amru Kamei de Shvor Malka, Amru Apirion Namte the Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is not the Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah, but Rabbi Shimon of Reish Lakish. So when he says Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, when he says Ashiyakoach, to Reish Lakish. That's what he's saying. When Reish Lakish passed him like Rabbi Shimon, should go after Reish Lakish. But you'd still have to say then that Shvor Malka is someone later. Someone later than Reish Lakish or the Talmud of Reish Lakish, and that would indicate that Shvor Malka here is not the king, if you want to say it, but someone who is not Shmuel. And then you'd have to come up with it being someone like Rabba or Rav Nachman, that it was also named Shvor Malka in the Gemara, and that way you could solve the problem as well in that manner. With this, we complete the 10th perek of Bava Metzia, as well as Masechet Bava Metzia. And it ends off on this high note, again, this idea that even the non-Jews, if you say Shvor Malka is referring to non-Jews, recognize the godless of the dinim of our halachot that are found in the Seder Nezikin. And so therefore we end off with that high note, leading us into Baba Batra. Adron Alach, Abayit Veliyah, Slikala, Masechet Bava Metzia.